Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the chuppah tonight. A lot of very interesting minhagim about the chuppah. So we'll talk about some of them, some halachos, some minhagim. At this point, probably this week we'll talk mostly about minhagim, and then next week, because we have to do the chuppah in two phases. There's too much to talk about. But next week we'll talk about some things from a more halachic perspective. Okay. So the first thing I want to talk about when we talk about chuppah is the walking down to the chuppah, right? So walking down to the chuppah. If you notice, there are a lot of different minhagim when it comes to walking down to the chuppah. I in the context of weddings, I often mention my sister because she married a Syrian, and there were a lot of interesting minhagim. So at the chasuna, the first one to walk down was the hazan. The Hazan walked down singing Matobu, and he walked down, singing whatever he was singing. And then the next one to walk down were all of the Rabbanim of the community, walked down to the Chuppah. And then after that, so then the family, made their way down. But first was the Chazan singing, and then all the Rabbanim. So there's a lot of different interesting minhagim about walking down. In some families, just the Chasan and the Kala walk down. In some places, other family members walk down. It seems that in halacha, the only ones that from a halachic perspective, or even from a minhag perspective, there's some sort of inyan for them to walk down is the chazan and the kala. The other family members, so it seems that that's a later custom that has developed in some circles, and in some circles they don't do it. But even among our circles, where it is very common for the family members to walk down, it's certainly not a custom, that has any basis in the sense of the chasan and kala walking down. It's just a nice thing, I think it's more of like a nachas for the parents to see their kids, and their family walking down. I think that's probably where it developed from. And even, grandparents walking down. I mean, again, it's a beautiful thing. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but it doesn't, there are no classical sources that talk about all of these people walking down. So occasionally you have a chasan or a kala who say, listen, we don't want, 30 people walking down to the chuppah for whatever reason. It schleps it out, or this and that, or sometimes you have certain siblings that don't want to walk down, whatever the case is. So, there's no requirement for other people to walk down. It's mainly really just for the chasan and the kala. Now, we know when the chasan, well, let's focus on the chasan and kala, because that's the real inyan. When the chasan and kala come down, so we know that there are two people on either side. And I certainly mentioned in some context, that there is a difference of opinion as to what exactly that custom is of the people walking the chasan and the kala down. In the halacha, they're called shoshvinin, or shoshvinin. They're called the shoshvinin. These are the literally like the friends of the chasan and the kala that are escorting the chasan and kala to the chuppah. And again, if you look at, it's interesting because the minhag apparently used to be that anybody would walk the chasan and kala down. It wasn't particularly the parents. We know nowadays the two most common customs in our circles. The most common custom is for the father and the mother to walk the child down, whether it's the girl or the boy. And in some customs, in some Hasidish circles, they have the custom of the two fathers walk the chasan down and the two mothers walk the kala down. But it seems clear that in older sources, anybody would walk them down. It wasn't particularly parents, not the chutanim and not the parents. It was just people. If you look at the Ramah, it's interesting. The Ramah in Hilchos Avelos actually quotes this halacha in the context of the Ramah discussing when what an avel can go to, what an avel cannot go to, in terms of attending parties and things like that. So we know an avel is not supposed to go to the wedding. So that's what the Ramah begins by writing. As long as there's music, for the chasan and the kala, then the avel should not be there. Avel should not be present in the hall when there's music for the chasan and the kala. That's the Ramah. That's our custom. Poland and in Germany. I skipped a part of the Ramah, and then the Ramah writes. V'chein yuchal at the end. V'chein yuchal hachnis chasan kederach artzenu. So first of all, before I get to that, there is a part of this Ramah in the middle where he discusses an Avel going to the Chuppah, but not to the Seuda part. Now again, this is not a Shir in Hilchos Avelos, and that's for another time. But there is a discussion about that. However, it seems that clear in the poskim that the Rama was talking about a situation where there was no music at the chuppah. You know, nowadays where we have music at every chuppah, basically, you know, some chuppahs you go to, it's like a concert. You know, they have a 15-piece orchestra at the chuppah. So anytime that there's music there, an avil can't be there anyway because of the music. So forget about chuppah, not chuppah. The avil can't be there because of the music. If theoretically you would have some sort of a chuppah where there was no music, which again I don't think really exists in today's day and age, so then there might be something to talk about an avil attending the chuppah ceremony without music, as opposed to the rest of the wedding. There are some discussions about Masaber Kiddushin. What about if a rav is an avil? Right, he's in Yud Beis Chodesh, so can he be Mesader Kiddushin? So generally the custom is that he can be Mesader Kiddushin. There is some discussion about getting a bracha. Can someone who's an Avel get a bracha? You know, again, so this is a little bit, that's just a little bit of an aside when it comes to Hilchos Avelus. But at the end, the Rama writes that an Avel, one of the things that an Avel is allowed to do, and again, assuming that there's no music, if we have music, we have a bigger problem, but an Avel is allowed to escort. Yuchal hachnis chasam kiderech artzeinu. He says, our minog is, we have two people who escort the chasan. Right, he's talking about the chasan. We have the minog of the kala also. But two people escorting the chasan and the kala down to the chuppah. And the Rama writes that one of those people can be an avel. Right, again, assuming that there's no music, the avel, the person can walk the avel can walk the chasan down. So here we have a reference to this idea. What's the source of this concept of walking, escorting the chasan and the kala down to the chuppah? So it actually comes from the Ribono Shel Olam himself. The Gemara in Eruvin, it's also a Gemara in Brachos, tells us vayivyeha, based on the pasuk in Bereishis, vayivyeha el ha'adam, that the pasuk says in Bereishis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Chava and brought Chava to Adam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu escorted Chava down to the chuppah, so to speak. He brought Chava to Adam. Melamei she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu shoshvinus la'adam arishon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the shoshvin. He was the friend who escorted Chava down to the chuppah to Adam Arishon. So that's the original, that's the source. The origin of this is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself escorting the quote-unquote, the chasan and the kala. Obviously there was no wedding there, but the chasan and the kala down to the chuppah.
Wouldn't that, if God himself, he's the creator,
right?
So wouldn't that indicate maybe the parents should do it, because they're the creators?
I hear that, interesting. It's an interesting idea, maybe. Right? Yeah, interesting. I didn't think about that. Maybe that's where the besides for the fact that emotionally, people like escorting their child out to the chuppah, but we'll see. Also, there's a little bit of a halachic basis for it. Also, but that's an interesting idea. The Matte Moshe also lived in Poland in the 1500s. So he writes in his sefer. He has a lot of different minhagim, and he writes a lot about the minhagim of a chuppah. So he writes in source number 3, Ukishamolichin achasan lachnisa lechupa, azai beishur shvin molichimoso, echar miyamin vechar mismol. He says, that's our custom. We escort the chasan and the kala down, one person on the right, one person on the left, kedisa bereshis rabba. And he quotes a medrash, which is a little bit of a different take than the Gemara in Eruvin. The Gemara in Eruvin, we had HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself acting as the shoshvin, acting as the escort. And here in the Medrash, it says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Simon, Michael veGavriel hayu shoshvin of Shel Adam Arishon. And Michael veGavriel were the shoshvinim of Adam Arishon. Now again, it could be, if you read the Gemara and the Medrash carefully, it could be the Medrash is talking about Chava. I'm sorry, the Gemara is talking about Chava, and the Medrash maybe is talking about Adam. So it could be that that Gavriel and Michael escorted Adam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu escorted Chava. That's a possibility. You know, maybe, but otherwise, it's just two different ideas about what that represents. And he also quotes the Tashbetz, who brings a different reason why we escort, down. And we know that last time we spoke about the fact that a chasan is dom el melech, a chasan is compared to a king. So the Tashbetz writes, a king, when he walks around, he doesn't walk by himself. Ha chasan dom el melech. Right, according to the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that we saw, Ma Melech Hayolav Makifin Oseh Af Chasan Shoshvinu Makifin Oseh. Just like the Melech, right? He's surrounded by his entourage. He has his security guards. Right, wherever the president goes, he's got his security detail following him. So to here you have the entourage. The Chasan, who's Dom HaMelech, has his entourage as well. It's interesting, in this context, the Matan Moshe actually quotes the halacha, the minhag, I should say, of carrying candles. Right? We know that many have the minhag that the shoshvinim, you know, the parents, when they're escorting their child down to the chuppah, they carry candles. So what's the idea behind that? So it's interesting, there it used to be a few different variations of this type of minhag of candles. So one, he writes, V'yesh mekomos shenagim shekola shayachim ba nosim neros harbe lefanav. So he says, first of all, he says, some have the minhag that not only just the parents or the escorts, like basically everybody who was like around would be holding a candle. You know, there'd be many, many candles. It was like, many, many candles at this chuppah. He says, V'yesh mekomos zorkin neros dolkos. This sounds a little bit dangerous. But some places, apparently, they had the minhag to throw lit candles. Now, maybe that's referring to juggling. I'm not sure. Maybe people were juggling like torches. And I've seen that, people juggling torches of fire. Maybe that's what he's referring to. He quotes the Kamosh HaKasav HaTashbeitz, why remez lematan Torah? He says the candles are all remez to matan Torah. Why? What was matan Torah? Shenemar, vayhi kolo suvrakim, the lightning. Right, the lightning of Matan Torah. So that's represented by the candles of at a chasana. The light at the chasana represents that idea. It's interesting. Also, at Achnasa Sefer Torah, there's also a minhag to have some sort of candles or torches. As they're escorting the Torah to the shul, to the arum. He writes, "B'yesh mekomos ein minhag hazeh, rak hashnei shoshvinim kol echad yesh lo ner echad biyado." And that's really our custom, right? Nowadays, we don't really have many candles at the chuppah. We certainly don't have throwing candles at the chuppah, but we do have just the two shoshvinim carrying these candles down. But it does represent. It seems to be that at least one of the ramazim, one of the ideas, is this correlation to matan Torah. As we know, matan Torah represents the wedding between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here at a wedding also, which represents that the beginning of that marriage, we have that the kolos uvrakim, the reference to that light of lightning. What, to have the light?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Anyway, so there is a source. There is one source that seems to focus on father and mother walking their child down. It's not just an emotional thing, but there is one source to it, and that is the Zohar. If you look at the Zohar in source number 4, the Zohar in Parshas Bereishis, so on that same pasuk of Vayivyeha El Ha'adam, that the Gemara in Eruvin was discussing, that pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought Chava to Adam HaRishon, so the Zohar says, Mehacha ulifna, from here we learn, Deba'an Abba ve'ima dekala le'Allah. Right, so this is basically what Joe was saying before. I didn't really think of it in this sense, but that's basically what Joe was saying. Is this Zohar? Joe, are you learning Zohar on the side that we don't know about? But so that's basically what Joe was saying, that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the creator, and he brought Chava to Adam HaRishon, so the Abba and the Ima, the Kala, right? The mother and the father of the Kala, they're also supposed to bring the Kala. And here's the ending, the interesting part where the Zohar ends, Birshusei Dechasan, that they're supposed to transfer her, so to speak, to the Rishus of the Chasan. And in fact, it's interesting because from a halachic perspective, if you think about what's going on at the chuppah, essentially this is what's happening. What's happening at the chuppah is that, and particularly for the Kala, because we know that when it comes from a halachic perspective, the Chasan is the one who is making the kinyan to the Kala, right? The Chasan says, Hariyad Mekudesh Asli, he's the one who's doing the Kiddushin to the Kala. So in a sense, what's happening is that the father and the mother, right, until this point, this young lady was in the Rashus, was in the domain, was in the, you know, was within the realm of the father and the mother. And now the father and the mother are, so to speak, handing off their daughter to this young man that he's now going to care for their daughter. And essentially, that's what the Zohar is saying. It's not just an emotional thing, but that's really what the Zohar is saying. That's what the chuppah represents. It represents, if you think about it, it's a very powerful imagery. You know, of the mother and the father, that literally they're taking their daughter, who's been, you know, under their tutelage and, you know, under their care for all of these years, and they're saying, okay, buddy, you know, now it's your turn to take care of my daughter. And that's essentially what's happening, the transfer from the Rishus of the father and the mother to the Rishus of the of the chasan. In fact, halachically also, some say that that's what chuppah is. When we think about chuppah, so we know chuppah to mean a canopy. Well, maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more next week. But there's actually a big dispute among the Rishonim what the definition of chuppah is. When we say that chuppah means marriage, so what is that? There's one opinion that says canopy, but there's four other opinions in the Rishonim and the Achronim what chuppah might be. Some say it means yichud, and that's why we have the yichud room afterwards, which we'll talk about. But one of the opinions in the Rishonim say that chuppah is actually a transferring this woman from the rishus of her parents to the rishus of the chassan. That's chuppah. And you have to transfer into his rishus. And that's part of the idea of the chuppah also. That's why we have the chuppah. We have that canopy. That canopy represents the rishus of the chassan. And now there she's going from her parents, and now she's going into a new domain, into a new rishus, into new into new care. So that's under new management, right? That's that's essentially what's happening when we have this chuppah, and the father and the mother are escorting her down. The Maharsha seems to say also in source number 5 in his Chidushi Agados in Brachos, as we said, this Gemara in source number 2 also appears in Brachos. So he writes the davar zeh michlal shu gemilus chasadim. He writes, and again, he's not focusing on the concept of the father and the mother walking down. He's just focusing in general on the concept of shoshvinim, of people escorting the chasan and the kala down. And he says it's really gemilus chasadim, essentially the idea that a chasan and kala shouldn't just be walking down to the chuppah by themselves. Now they should have people that are helping them out, that are helping to escort them, helping to get them to that place. We all know, right, if there's someone who's in need, if there's an orphan, a yasam or a yasoma, sometimes you find in the halachic literature that one of the biggest zechusim that a person can get, one of the biggest merits that a person can get, is to make a wedding for a yasam or a yasoma. To make a wedding for an orphan, a person who doesn't have parents, they don't have parents to make their wedding. You make a wedding for a yasam and a yasom. It's a tremendous, it's a big schus. In fact, even we were talking about Hilchos Avelos before. So one of the great exceptions in Hilchos Avelos to a wedding that you're allowed to go to, it says if you make a chasna for a yasam and a yasoma, that type of wedding, if you make that wedding, you're allowed to go to the wedding even if you're in Avelos, because it's such a tremendous schus, such a tremendous simcha for this, it's such a tremendous mitzvah. To do such a thing. So, the idea of gemilus chesed also. Now again, Baruch Hashem, most chasanim and kalos have parents that can escort them down, but occasionally you don't. So you have this idea of gemilus chasadim as well, bringing them to the chuppah. It's interesting, if you think about the order of who goes first, so we know the chasan goes first, right? And in fact, that's also a Zohar. The Zohar in source number 6 says, v'oil ha-chasan l'chuppah b'kadmesa, that the chassan goes down to the chuppah first. Why does he go down to the chuppah first? So one idea is, I think we could, if you think back to source number 4 that we just mentioned, if the idea of the Zohar of the husband and wife escorting, right, the mother and the father escorting their child, their daughter, especially the daughter, down to the chuppah to go into the rishus of the chassan. Until now she was in their rishus, and now they're transferring her into the rishus of the chassan, so it makes a lot of sense that the chassan has to be there first, because symbolically that's exactly what's happening, right? That literally she's going from their rishus to his rishus, so it makes a lot of sense that he's there first. If she's there first, it kind of defeats the whole purpose. Right? The whole idea is the transferring of the kala, from their rishus to his rishus. So that's I think one idea of why the chassan has to be there first. Interestingly, another reason why the chassan has to be there first is because there is a minhag that's mentioned. It's not so commonly done, although you see it here and there. Although I think most people who do it because of the romantic element, perhaps in this minhag. But the Rokeach quotes a minhag, and he says, "Ukshakal in source number 7, nichneses lavo b'shar habayis." When the kala comes, and in those days, let's say the shar habayis just means the hall, right? She's coming to the doorway of the hall, about to enter the chuppah. As hachasan holech shom likrasa, the chasan comes down to greet her, right? Kachasan likras kala. We have this idea. We mentioned in Lechadodi, right? The idea of the chasan going down to greet the kala. In fact, also Rashi in Chumash, in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Lamed Gimel mentions this as well. This is in Parshas of Vezos Habracha. The Torah tells us, "Vayomer Hashem, Vayomar." I'm sorry, Hashem mi Sinai ba. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes from Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes from Sinai. V'zorach mi seir lamo. So what's that referring to? Says Rashi in source number 9. Mi Sinai ba yatsa likrasa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went out to greet the Jewish people. Went out to greet Klal Yisrael. K'shebo li yisyatze b'sachti sahar. When the Jewish people came and stood at Har Sinai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was already on Har Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu came out to greet Klal Yisrael. Kechasan hayotze lahakbil p'nei kala. As Rashi says, like a chasan who's coming down to greet the kala. So, Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, he goes, the Pasuk, Ligraso Elokim, Lamanoshi Yotze Kenegdam. So we have this idea already mentioned in Chazal of the chasan going down to meet the kala based on Maimon Har Sinai. Again, we see again this correlation between Maimon Har Sinai and between a chuppah. I don't know, maybe that's why we have flowers at a chuppah also. You know, the chuppah is very often decorated with flowers. Maybe part of that also is to remind us of Har Sinai. And we have this idea of just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu came out to greet Kali, so the chassan comes out to greet the Kala. If that's the case, then it also makes a lot of sense that the chassan has to be there first. Because if the chassan is coming down to greet the Kala, that means he's got to be in position first, just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu was on the mountain waiting for the Kala, and the Kala comes down, the chassan comes out to greet the Kala. By the way, just as an aside, you see kind of the underlying theme, you know, running through this, you know, many of these sources, is that if you had to, you know, when push comes to shove, if you have to ask which one is the main player at a chuppah, right? Which one is the main player at a chuppah, is the most, powerful, moments at a chuppah, it really revolves around the Kala. The chassan is doing a lot of the public work. He's doing the kiddushin, you know, he's going first. But essentially, if you think about it, a lot of that has to do with the kala. A lot of this is revolving around the kala, right? The hachnasas kala, you know, the whole idea of escorting the kala, chassan coming out to greet the kala. You know, a lot of the chuppah has to do with the kala. And I think this is also in general in life. Very often, you know, the men have it's like the Ezer Kenegdo. The men have this public role. And very often it's the women behind the scenes who are really running the show and who are really, things are very often revolving around the women who are the main players, and the men just have this like public role just to, I don't know, you know, to keep them busy, to keep them out of trouble perhaps. But you see that, you know, it's a very interesting theme you see kind of running through these sources, that everything is really revolving around the kala. Most of the emotion at the chuppah and the power of what's happening at a chuppah really revolves around the kala and what's happening in her life. Yeah.
The chassan is not supposed to see the kala a week before the wedding, so how can he come and greet her when she enters the hall when he's not supposed to see her until the batek?
Okay, yeah, so I didn't mention this, I forgot to talk about this minhag. This minhag actually is one of the minhagim that has the, you know, its source is shrouded in mystery. No one really knows exactly why. It is a minhag, it's an established minhag, but it's not so clear exactly where this minhag came from. There are different theories that are given, as to why we have this minhag. Some say it surrounds a woman becoming a nida, I don't know. There's a lot of different theories surrounding this custom. But there is an established custom of the chassan and kala not seeing each other for a week before the chuppah. Now, this is really talking about immediately prior to the chuppah. This is talking about really even after the bedekin. We're not talking about but beforehand. This is really after the bedekin. When she's coming to the Shar Habayis, meaning to begin the chuppah ceremony, so then you really don't have that issue. But once you mentioned it, it's interesting. That's why, you know, there are poskim who are lenient. You know, let's say some poskim are lenient to take pictures. You know, the chassan and kala can take pictures together beforehand because, you know, it's a minhag, but it's not so clear what the source of the minhag is. So if it's gonna, you know, if it's gonna help out and decrease the weight between the chuppah and the first dance, so maybe it's kedai to do that. You know, many people still don't do that. When they wait the hour anyway, you're eating salad and soup or whatever you're eating, so you have time to kill. Yeah.
If you have the minhag that the parents divorce,
right?
What if the parents are divorced? They still do that.
Okay, so it's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if there's any sources about this. I don't know. I didn't see anything about it. I'll try to look a little bit more and see if I can find something about it. I didn't see anything about this. I don't know. It might just be an emotional thing. I'm not sure. I have to check it out. But it might just be an emotional thing, that it could just be that they're not comfortable, you know, both being there. But from a halachic perspective, you know, or a minhag perspective, I don't really see what the problem would be, even if they're divorced, because again, this has very little to do with their marriage. You know, a lot of this, you know, we said it used to be the custom that just two random friends would walk them down. you know, shoshvinim, just two acquaintances, two friends, just would walk them down. And even if they're divorced, you know, they're still, you know, the kala is still in their rishus, in their domain, you know, mother and father, even if they're no longer married to each other. So I don't know, you know, it could be some people feel it's like a bad simon or something like that, you know, for a divorced couple to walk them down to the chuppah. Yeah, I don't know. I'll try to do a little more research about it, but I don't. I didn't see anything, and I'm not sure why. What the real objection to that would be, you know, besides for an emotional objection, you know, which could be. Okay, so after they come down to the chuppah, the minhag is that the chassan wears a kittel at the chuppah. Chassan wears a kittel at the chuppah. If you look, it's quoted in this custom of wearing a kittel is quoted in many sources. One of them I just brought is the Mata Moshe that we had earlier, who quotes many of the minhagim of the chuppah. Misatfin in source number 10, Achasim Atalis Levana. So he actually quotes a minhag of wrapping the chasim in a talis. And some have this custom. Sfarim have the custom. I believe Yekis have the custom of wearing a talis under the chuppah. Some have the custom of, you know, putting the talis over the chasim and the kala together. But that custom is mentioned, right? This is the custom to wear a talis is an old custom. Most Ashkenazim, besides for I think the Yekki community, I think most Ashkenazim don't have the minhag, but there is such a minhag to wear a talis. And the reason why it's interesting, talis levana kedei lekayim b'chol esi hiu begadecha levanim. The pasuk in Koheles that you should always make sure your clothing is white. And what does that mean? You should always make sure your clothing is white. The mashal of Koheles is that a person should always make sure that they're doing tshuva, right? Always make sure that your slate is clean, that your clothing is white, is a reference to the fact that your slate always has to be clean. You always have to make sure you're doing tshuva. And we know, as we discussed last week with the minhag of fasting, the chasan kala fasting, that the chuppah is really, it's like a mini Yom Kippur for them, right? This is like a mini Yom Kippur for the chasan and the kala. You know, they have an atonement and they do tshuva, and therefore, that's why they wear a kittel, just like we wear a kittel on Yom Kippur. The chassan wears a kittel under the chuppah because of that idea of doing tshuva. And he quotes the Kolba who writes that, and he says, "When mitamzem al bishano so a kittel b'shas kinesis l'chuppah." Right, when he comes out of the chuppah, you put on this kittel as well. It's interesting. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch also mentions this, but he adds one little idea here in source number 11 on the next side of the page, and he writes, "Hashoshvinim al bishan es a chassan b'kittel." Interestingly, right, that the shoshvinim actually should put it on him. He shouldn't put it on himself. Right, if you look, I mean, many have the custom that the mother, right, puts the kittel on her son. You know, so I always thought that was like, it's like a nice thing. You know, the mother, like for the last time, she's getting him dressed. You know, before she's not there every morning to help him out. But here, it's really said the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says no. This is really an idea of the Shoshivinim. Again, they're taking care of him. You know, this is like the Gemilos Chasadim. They're taking care of him. He's like the Chasan Dom Lamelech. This is his entourage. You know, the king wants to put on his coat. He doesn't put it on himself. You know, he has his servants holding it for him, and then they put it on him. So that's the idea also of them putting the kittel onto the chassan. And he adds, "Kedei sheyizkor yom hamisa v'yisor b'tshuva," so that you should remember the yom hamisa and do tshuva. So doing tshuva seems to be the same as what the Mate Moshe quoted in the name of the Kolbo. The yom hamisa is a little bit of an addition of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Now, it's a little bit of a morbid thing, I guess, to think about the yom hamisa, you know, under your chuppah, and I know all the jokes will come out, you know, at this point, but, whatever people are thinking, but there's no women here, so you can't even say that. But the idea of the Yom HaMisa, obviously, is not that, you know, what you're entering into is the Yom HaMisa, but it's to think about, to think about the fact that, you know, although this is such a happy time in our lives, and this is something that's so special, you know, we have to keep it, we have to just temper our simcha. You know, we have to temper our simcha, like the Koheles says, you know, again and again. Our simcha has to, you know, it's good to be happy, and we should be happy, but we can't get carried away in our happiness. We have to recognize that, you know, what life is and what our priorities should be. Another minute that the kid, yeah.
What about wearing something over the kid?
Okay, so I don't know where, I'm not sure where that comes from. That I think is more of a chassidish, it's a chassidish minhag, that they wear like an overcoat or something, over the kittel. I'm not sure what the source of that is. Maybe because if the kittel is remembering Yom HaMisa, but Yom HaMisa is something that maybe you want to remember like in private. You know, it's not something that you want to portray in public at a chuppah. You know, maybe that's part of the idea behind it. Maybe that's the idea behind that minhag. I think it's a chassidish minhag. I don't know. I'm not sure. The svarim I was using, and I was looking at were not the chassidish svarim. But But it could be that's part of the idea. Yes, yes, yes. The Rosh Hashiva, Rav Aaron Feldman of Neri Yisrael. So he makes him do it, but he tells him not to wear an overcoat, right? He just like
stuffed it into his pants.
Stuffed the whole kittel into his pants. My friend also, when Rav Feldman was in Sada Kiddushin, he like stuffed the whole kittel into his pants.
Because he didn't have an overcoat.
No, I think that's just what he does. I don't know. I think he feels like the overcoat looks silly. But I get it. You know, it's minhagim. So some people have that minhag. They wear an overcoat down. You know, if you don't have, and any time you don't have a minhag, if someone else is doing a minhag like that, it looks silly. You know, what's he doing? You know, with the overcoat.
When do you put the kittel on? Do you put the kittel on? Yossi put it on in before he walked down.
Right. Well, but I'm not. Was that because of a minhag, or was that just because of since the way he was putting on the kittel, he was stuffing it into his pants. It might not be the best thing to do under the chuppah. You know, it could be that just that practically it's better to do that in private. You know, if you're just putting the kittel on, you can put it on whenever. But that's my gut feeling. Yeah.
For those who wear a talis,
yeah.
Is that instead of the kittel or in addition to the kittel?
I think it's an addition to the kittel. I mean the Matan Moshe mentions both. So I think it's an addition to the kittel. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I don't remember if Sfardim wear a kittel. I'm trying to remember what my brother-in-law did, but it was some time ago. I can't remember now. I don't remember if Sfardim wear a kittel. I think Yekis wear a kittel. I don't remember about Sfardim offhand. I'm not sure. Another interesting minhag that's mentioned, and this is one that's not so well known, but the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch also mentions gam noagin laseis efer berosh hachasan, that you should also place ashes on the head of the chasan b'makom hanachas tefillin, on the place where he puts his tefillin, you put ashes there. It doesn't have to be a bucket load of ashes. You just put a little bit of ash there, and then you can brush it off. The Shulchan Aruch quotes this minhag also. It's in Shulchan Aruch in source number 12.
That's towards the end of the.
Okay, so it's interesting. So everybody does this at a different place. The timing.
I saw many rabbanim do it like in private before the.
Right. So there's a lot of different minhagim of when to do this. It's not so clear, you know, when this is done. The Shulchan Aruch, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch does not talk about when. He just talks about, you know, he mentions it after the kittel. But again, that could be, you know, you can put on the kittel before if you want. You can put on the, you don't have to put on the kittel under the chuppah. The Shulchan Aruch also just says Tzarech Laseis Efer Berosh HaChasan. It's source number 12. He gives the reason. He says it's Zeich La'Avelu Yerushalayim. Right. So you're saying some people do it with the breaking of the glass.
No, when it's
in Yimesh Kachech. Okay, before they break the glass. Right. So some people. Okay. So I hear you. So because it is the same idea. It's the Avelu Yerushalayim. But I've seen different things. I've seen Stephen saying I've seen Rabbanim who put it on. You know, let's say in private in a room. Before the chuppah, they put ashes on the chassan's head. I've seen it not under the chuppah. You know, I've seen it. You know, different minhagim. But that's the idea. And the reason why we do it in the makom hanachas tefillin is based on the pasuk that the Shulchan Aruch quotes at the end in Yeshaya, Lasum la'avele tzion pe'er tachas efer. And the word pe'er, which means glory, okay, always is a reference. The Gemara says the word pe'er is a reference to tefillin. Pe'ercha chavosh alecha. So pe'er is always a reference to tefillin. So that's why we learn that you should put it on in the makom tefillin. So whatever, you know, again, I don't think that there's any clear timing as to when that has to be. There's different minhagim. Some put it on before, some put it on during. Some put it on maybe when they sing Imesh Kachech, which interesting. You know, we'll talk about that. You know, next week probably we'll get to the breaking of the glass. But Imesh Kachech is a very new minhag. You know, Imesh Kachech is not mentioned in any classic sources. The breaking of the glass is mentioned, but the singing of the song of Imesh Kachech is not mentioned. In fact, in many circles today, they don't have this custom. You know, we do it in our communities. You know, we have the custom to do it. If you go to the Hasidish circles, even the more like yeshivish, black hat type circles, nobody does it. You know, they don't. They just don't. It's not the minhag. They never did it, so they don't sing Imesh Kachech. They break a glass, but they don't sing Imesh Kachech. But that's for another time. But okay, once they get up to the chuppah, so we know they sing. They sing the Baruch Haba and they sing the different songs. It's interesting, you know, I was looking around at some of the Sfarim that discussed the Minhagim of a Chuppah, and, a lot of these songs, it's not even so clear, like, when this developed, you know, where the Minhag, you know, came to. Everybody sings these songs, Mi Adir, and, everybody sings these songs, but it's not even so clear where they came from, what the origins are, but that's the Minhag that we sing these songs. And then we know, famously, that the Kala makes her seven circles around the Chasan. She goes around the chasan seven times. It's interesting that also is a minhag that evolved over time. Many of these minhagim evolved over time. If you look at the Matan Moshe, again, when this was written in the 1500s, so he writes about three times. Right? He writes, if you look in source number 13, the Achar Kach Mivin Akala, Umosrin Osala HaChasan Shlosha Pe'amin. The three times surrounding the Chasan is really the idea, is really an idea of giving the Kala to the Chasan, giving her over to the Chasan, like we spoke about before. The transferring of the Rishus, from the Rishus of the parents to his Rishus, doing that three times, that's the idea of this, of encircling him three times. He quotes the Maharam in the Tashbetz, who brings a minhag, that it's corresponding to the three times in the Torah that we have the word kiyikach in reference to marriage, in reference to kiddushin. Kiyikach ishisha uva ila usneya, v'chiyikach ishisha uva ala, v'chiyikach isha chadasha. These three times that it says kiyikach, so that's a reference. That's really the idea of surrounding, of encircling him three times. There are other svarim, the Likutei Mahariach. I didn't bring it here. I couldn't find the original. I couldn't find the original wording in the database. But the Likutei Mahariach brings the minhag to encircle the chasan seven times, which is the way we do it. He says that's the minhag in Yerushalayim, and apparently that's then what has what's become the really universal custom of encircling him three times. It's interesting. There's another sefer by the name of the Torah Chaim. Again, I couldn't find this inside, but I saw it quoted by the Eidus Yisrael. And the Eidus Yisrael quotes the Sefer Torah Chaim from the Admor from Vardov, and the Vardover Rebbe. And the Vardover Rebbe explains that if you think about Yosef and his dream, right? So what was Yosef's dream coming up in several parshios? So Yosef was in the center, and we had all of the stalks. Right, so his bundle was in the center, and all the other bundles were bowing down to him. Right, so he was in the center of a circle. So he explains, and he bases it on a, he says the Ramban, has this concept also, what was the imagery? The imagery was of the Mashpia, the one, Yosef was going to be the one to support his brothers. He was going down to Mitzrayim to support his brothers, he was going to provide for them, and they were all around him. So the imagery is the imagery of the supporter being in the middle, and the mekabel, and the one who's getting that support, encircling the one who is supporting. So, if you think about the idea of the husband having the obligation to be the breadwinner, having the obligation to support his wife, as we say in the Ksuba, the husband has to, the Ezon va'afarnes, right, the husband has a chiyuv to support his wife. So that's also part of that imagery of the husband being in the center, and his wife encircling him, that it's now his responsibility to provide for this woman. Yeah.
So I heard them, I don't know, maybe you'll think this is a more modern approach, but by the bedecking, the chasan is covering her face, and he's acknowledging this is the one as opposed to anyone else.
Right.
By the chuppah, he's saying, Hareyat Mekudeshes Li.
Okay.
This is the only time, three times is a chazaka, and this is the only time that she is saying, of my free will,
This is my chosen one.
This is my
interesting.
My
interesting. 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 It's also an interesting idea. I didn't see it, but it's interesting. Well, I also mentioned this on Sukkis from Rav Usher Weiss. He discusses the idea of encircling seven times. He was talking about Hoshanos and Hakafos, where we encircle the Bima. Hoshana Rabbah we go around seven times, and Simchas Torah we go around seven times. So the idea there, the idea that he posits is the idea of breaking down barriers. That when we go around, we're like spiritually breaking down the barriers, like the seven the seven different levels. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is distanced from us seven levels. That's why at the end of Yom Kippur we say we say Hashem Hu Elokim seven times. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going back up to those seven realms. So here we're breaking down the barriers. So I said then. Perhaps that's also part of the reason why the Kala goes around the Chasan seven times, to break down the barriers. And in the beginning of a marriage, very often you have some, many natural barriers. And here the Kala is breaking down those barriers. Alternatively, you can also understand the Kala is encircling to kind of like build a barrier around her husband, kind of like what Stephen was saying, that like, this is my husband now, it's just the two of us, whereas before he could have married anyone. Right, but now building that wall around her chasan, and now this is just the two of us. Okay, we'll conclude just in the last 2 minutes here with how they position themselves at the under the chuppah. So it's very interesting. The Rokeach says that the kala should be standing to the right of the chasam. Right? The chasam stands to the left and the kala stands to the right, meaning to his right. She should be on his right. And based on a pasuk of Nitzava Shagal Liminecha, which he says is Sofei Tevos Kala, right? Hey Lamed Chaf. So it's Sofei Tevos Kala. So that's a reference that the Kala should be on the right. And many different Sfarim quote this idea. It's not just him. And that is the Minhag, that the Kala is always on the right of the Chasam based on this. In terms of what direction they face, so it's very interesting. There's many different Minhagim and different things that are brought in terms of the direction that they're facing. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that they should be facing Mizrach. The Chasam and the Kala should be facing Mizrach, and the Mevarech, which is the Mesader Kiddushin, should be facing Marav, should face west. They should be facing east towards Yerushalayim, and he should be facing west, right, across from them. And he says that the reason why he stands across from them is so that the bracha should be panim el panim. Just like when it comes to the duchening, we say that the bracha of the kohanim has to be panim el panim. That's why you can't be on the sides, you can't be behind. You have to be in front of the kohanim. You can be off to the side a little bit, but it has to be in front of the kohanim, because that's the bracha. You know, brachas always go panim el panim. So to the mevarech should be panim el panim to the chasan kal. They should stand to the east, and he should stand facing the west. Now, if you imagine that the chuppah is being done towards the east, so that means that the chasan and the kala have their backs to the crowd, and they're facing east, and the Sadar Kiddushin is facing them. Generally, I remember hearing once that was a Yeki minhag, that's the way the Yekis have it, situated, that the chasan and kala have their backs to the crowd, facing east. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch quotes also that the chasan and the kala should face east, but he says that the mevarech should also face east, which is interesting. He has a minhag that the mevarech is not facing the chasan and the kala, but he's also facing east. Now he's probably at an angle or something, or on the side a little bit, but says also he should be facing east. We know nowadays that there's also the custom that the Mesader Kiddushin faces the chasan and kala, but the chasan and kala face the tzibur, right? And the Mesader Kiddushin has his back to the tzibur. That's, I think, the most prevalent custom today. But again, there are many, many different customs as to how exactly they are positioned and how exactly they stand. Just the last two points. One is a very interesting Tikkun HaZohar that I was shocked. I saw this when I was preparing for the shiur, and I've never seen this before. But the Tikkun HaZohar writes that it's in source number 17, Tzrichin Amal Kadisha Lemekam Be'amida Kadmehon. So he says everybody has to stand throughout the chuppah. Everybody has to stand at a chasana. You can't sit down at a chasana. And I saw in the Sefer Eidus Yisrael, he says that, yeah, of course, that's the minute. Of course, you have to stand throughout the chuppah for the Shev Brachos and everything. I've never seen this in my life, but maybe in Eretz Yisrael, I've heard, different people, maybe they stand at the chuppah. Here they stand if it's like, if the overflow crowd is standing on the side or in the back, but otherwise everybody's sitting down. But according to, I was literally, my mind was blown that here we have this Tikkun HaZohar that says everybody should be standing up at a chuppah, but it seems to be very clear that that's not the minhag nowadays. I've been to many weddings, I've never seen this before. I've been to blackhead weddings and modern weddings and all sorts of weddings, and nobody, I've never seen this, people standing at a chuppah. But apparently it's a Tikkun HaZohar. The final thing with this we'll conclude is the Zohar at the end says a fascinating thing, and there's a minhag that if one of the parents of the chasan or the kala is no longer with us, is no longer with them, so there's a minhag of mentioning the parent under the chuppah. Some have a minhag even of making a kelmole before the chuppah starts, for the parent's memory. There is a minhag also to invite, to go to the kever of the parent before the chasana, and to invite the parent to the chasana, right? Now, very often you say, well, their spirit will be with you and everything like that, and it's a nice, it sounds nice and it sounds warm, but if you look at the Zohar says this explicitly, it's unbelievable. I've heard of the Zohar before, but I saw it for the first time in print when I was preparing this year. But if you look at the Zohar says that Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to every chasana, right? You invite a Kadosh Baruch Hu to the chasana, Yismach Yisrael Ba'osav, so Kadosh Baruch Hu comes in and rejoices with the chasan and the kala. If you look two lines from the end, right before it's underlined, it says Le'ilein Kutcha Brichu Ushchinte, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to the wedding, the Avi Ve'ima. It's not just that Kadosh Baruch Hu that comes to every wedding, but it's also the father and the mother of the chasan and the kala. The Afagav, the Misu, even though they're no longer with us, they've passed away. Listen to this, unbelievable. Kuchabrichu Iakar Lon Migar Eden. Kadosh Baruch Hu goes to Gan Eden to pick him up. He gives them a ride. Right? He goes to Gan Eden. He picks up the father and the mother that have passed. The Aisilun Imei Lehahu Chedva. And he brings them with him to the Chasana. Right? The parents, the deceased parents, come with the Kadosh Baruch Hu to the Chasana. Lenat Lachulka de Chedva im Kuchabrichu Shchinte. To take part in the simcha with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's just unbelievable Zohar, right? It's unbelievable Zohar. It's not just, you know, we're not just saying it, that it's a cute thing that the parents, you know, that the deceased parents are there at a chasana. But a father and a mother that are no longer with us, that have passed, they're literally at the chasana with the chasana and the kala, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why you have many of these minhagim. Yeah. You're saying they're coming, they're crashing anyway. They don't need an invitation, you know? HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need an invitation, right? It's derech eretz. It's derech eretz. You know, your parents would want to be invited. You know, they wouldn't just want to come. Yeah. Open Aron?
Yeah. And they were saying something.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
And after that they finished and then they
go. I don't know. I'll try to look into it for next week. I'm not sure. Yeah.
When the Kala encircles the Chasan, she goes counterclockwise. What's
okay.
The reason for that?
I'm not sure. Uh-huh. I'm not sure about that. It's interesting. I don't know.
What about the new minhag of standing when the Chasan and Kala turn? Oh,
standing with the Chasan Kala come down. Okay, so it's interesting. So that might be, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, because a lot of people say that there's no source for that. You know, and a lot of times you see that everybody stands up except for the rabbis. And all the rabbis are sitting down because they know that there's no real makor for standing up. So some say it's because they're going to do a mitzvah. There is a source of like when the Jews used to bring Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, that everybody, when they would walk through Yerushalayim, people would stand up. You know, in their honor, they were coming to Yerushalayim to do a mitzvah. But we generally don't stand up when people are coming to do a mitzvah. A guy's coming to give tzedakah, you don't stand up. You know, he's coming to do a mitzvah. But so some say it's because of that. Some say it's chasen doma lemelech, and you stand up for the melech. But it could be also based on the Zohar. You know, the Tikkuni Zohar that says, you know, that we learned that tzrichid ama kadisha lemekam be'amida kadmehon. So maybe they understand that maybe that's like a partial kiyum of that minhag.
Then listen. So why don't we do the minhag if there's
of what standing the whole time? I don't know. It's not a minhag. But maybe that's like, you know, well, listen, we can't stand the whole time, but we'll stand at least when they walk down, you know.
In Eretz Yisrael, you don't necessarily have the wedding in a chuppah hall.
Correct. Well, if you're doing it on a mountain, so then everybody's standing up anyway. You don't have chairs.
Even when I was in a chuppah hall in Eretz Yisrael, the wedding was outside.
Yeah, I think in Eretz Yisrael, I think a lot of people just stand up, you know, stand around. They also their shirts are untucked, you know. They have different standards there. But anyway, so we'll stop here for tonight. Mitzvah Hashem, we'll pick up next week with some of the other minhagim and halachas of the chuppah.